family is actually a big part of our ministry. If you look on the outside, you think it's just about economics and it's about business, but you actually come inside, it really is all about family.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today I'm joined by Keelan Blackwell, the president and co-founder of the Chicago Eco House. Their mission is to train inner city youth in sustainable social enterprises to alleviate poverty. The Chicago Eco House's signature program is Southside Blooms, an off-grid flower farm youth social enterprise where participants convert vacant lots into commercial flower farms using solar power, rainwater irrigation. Prior to starting the Chicago Eco House, Keelan worked in the biodiesel industry and served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Thailand. He resides on the south side of Chicago with his wife, Hannah, who co-founded the Eco House with him and their three children. Thank you for joining us today, Keelan. How are you doing today?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on the program today. We're looking forward to talking.
I'm so happy to have you here. It's a very unique topic, and I love your mission. We're going to be talking about that too. Right here in my notes, I'm looking at several different things that I want to bring up with you. But before we get started, please tell us very briefly, already I introduced you a little bit about your family. I introduced you a little bit with the audience, but tell us very briefly about your family. I believe family is so important because it helps to emphasize what is most valuable to us. Family connects us. People who are listening to you, they will connect with you because that humanizes us. So with that being said, share a little bit about your family.
Oh, yeah. So I've been married for about 9 years now. This May will be our 9-year anniversary. I'm in interracial marriage. My wife is white. My larger family is multicultural. My sister-in-law is Filipino. So, you know, like have a lot of diversity in my family. My family really supports the work that we're doing. Hannah's parents, they come out here. They live in Portland. They come out here about 2 or 3 times a year to, you know, spend time with their grandkids. They've been very supportive of our work here. My family is very, very important to me. It's my number one ministry. And as you mentioned, I have 3 children. So, you know, I have twins who are now 6 years old. And then I have a 5-year-old daughter. So we're raising them as a little cohort. And I guess like the last thing I like to share about my family is we were homeschooled. So we're homeschooling all of our children while also engaging in our urban ministry here on the south side of Chicago.
That's fantastic, man. I'm so happy to hear. I love family men who are serving the Lord as they serve the family and also consider their family as their first ministry. That's so important, especially in urban culture where men who are dads, they need a role model. And even spiritual leaders tend to sometimes forget their families. It's important to send that message over and over again to those brothers and sisters that, hey, family is your first ministry. So I appreciate that comment you made in your introduction. To start off, could you tell us a little more about your journey to co-founding the Chicago Eco House?
Yeah, so I didn't initially see myself coming to Chicago. I'm originally from Madison, Wisconsin. I grew up in a very upper middle class family, far away from the trials and tribulations and trauma of the inner city. When I came here in 2011, I really felt called by the Lord to really take up my cross and follow him. So I literally quit my job, sold everything I had, came down here with pretty much next to nothing. I didn't know anyone. I started going to ministry school in 2011. And during that time in ministry school, I started volunteering at a high school here in Inglewood. So that was really kind of like my first connection to the south side of Chicago and the neighborhood. And I was just, you know, just tutoring. I was tutoring math and English. And during that time, I really got an opportunity to really build relationships with my students and their families and to really see a lot of the issues that they were dealing with. And really just kind of like as a young Black man, I just sort of felt like God was really giving me a choice where I could either continue to live my life the way I was, you know, largely for myself, or I could really dedicate my life to serving the good people of urban Black America and really just lay my life down for the people in the hood. I chose the latter. Really, the ministry that I really got called to was more of a marketplace ministry. So those who aren't familiar with the South Side of Chicago, there's really not a lot of jobs here. It's high poverty, high crime, a lot of violence, a lot of urban blight. It can be a bleak place sometimes. What we really want to do is to try to find a way to rebuild the economic foundation of the inner city. And that's really what the mission of the Chicago Youth House is really about.
Wow, that's fantastic. The awesome journey. And you said that you left everything. It just reminded me a little bit. I'm a pastor, so part of that is when I see life stories, I try to connect with biblical characters. And when I'm looking at your life story, I don't know how you see it, but I see like the journey Abraham took when Lord called him, leaving everything behind and moving on with the Lord, and then the Lord blessing him with his ministry and his calling. But why South Side Blooms? What about this approach in particular works?
Yeah, so this is our approach is a little bit different just because it's more of a social enterprise approach. So early on, Hannah, she was, we actually met because of this ministry. So she was living on the west side of Chicago, which is more known for drugs. The south side is more known for guns and violence. What Hannah was saying at that time was, Keelan, I really don't want to be in a situation where we have to turn away anyone. I want kind of to be able to build a ministry where we can help as many people as possible and we're not limited by financial constraints. So from the very beginning, we want to try to set it up in a way where it could be scalable. So we really did take a lot of lessons from Silicon Valley and sort of the startup culture there, and looking at how other businesses have scaled both contemporarily and as well as historically. It's really a big way how we've been a lot different is number one, we are more of a startup business. We are a very viable flower shop. The second thing is that we are creating bottom-up careers right here in the neighborhood. So the ideal isn't to train kids in flowers and then try to get them connected to flower shops outside the neighborhood. The ideal is for us to be the industry, for us to be those jobs. If you think about Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver and the Tuskegee Institute back in the late 1800s and early 1900s, their ministry was to really establish a new economic base for the South to really help a lot of African Americans at that time who just came out of slavery. Because of their work, they were able to create a lot of different inventions around the peanut as well as soybeans, and it really helped to save the economy of the South. So we sort of thought, like, well, why couldn't God do the same thing in 2024, right? Like, why couldn't God do the same thing today where we could basically come up with some different ideas, witty ideas, as the Bible would call it, to really establish a new economy here that would provide a lot of wealth right here in this neighborhood.
That's amazing, man. So how does urban ministry intersect with your other area of expertise?
Yeah, so urban ministry is really at the heart of what we do and what I do. So in terms of my expertise, my professional background is in community organizing as well as sustainable fuel. So I did, as you said in your introduction, I worked in the biodiesel industry. Really, urban ministry is really just taking those skills, those expertise, those experiences, and channeling it towards kingdom purpose. When I really look at the work of Southside Blooms, it's really about using all the blessings that God has really bestowed upon me, my education, my talent, et cetera, to be able to solve not only a very earthly and natural problem, but to really show heaven on earth in a place where people would kind of least expect it.
I just put a one little theme that in your conversation, in this recent conversation, kingdom focus. That's brilliant. Kingdom focus, right? And I love that you are combining the spiritual need with their physical need, because that's almost always the case that churches tend to focus on one and ignore the other. And that's a danger place to be at. But at the same time, when you are not doing it, then it's detrimental to the community of believers or just community in general. If we're going to be the light to the world, light cannot be just a spoken light. It needs to meet the physical needs of people and be the part of the solution and the contributor and mover and shaker of the society, because they have the true knowledge. They have the creator with them. So if such a powerful presence exists within the church, it should be demonstrated in the world. And if the world poverty, if the crisis of a community are not communicated or addressed by a church, or rather ignored, then there is this issue that we are accused of, believers, that we, the church is for the church people, or they just go and they just talk about spiritual. But let me ask you this, what is the importance of family-focused programs in urban communities?
So when you think about family, you know, particularly in our context, for those who don't know, on the south side of Chicago, particularly in the inner city, most households are single parent led, specifically single mothers. For example, a lot of the kids in our program, many of them have never been to a wedding, right? Marriage isn't something that is, you know, part of their family culture. So when you basically talk about family, I mean, it's essentially, in my opinion, you can't really build a successful society without a successful family unit, right? So everything really does start with that building block. And that's been one of the ways we've been able to do family ministry a little more creatively through our work. Because, you know, when you think about flowers, you think about weddings, right? And our youth, like there, a lot of our youth are doing weddings because they're working in flowers. And now it's forcing us to talk about marriage, right? You know, it's forcing us to have conversations around, well, hey, what are you going to do when you get married? You know, what kind of attributes should you look for in a future husband or a future wife, right? So it's really giving our youth and our community, that next generation here, a different vision of what their families could look like, which is absolutely huge. You know? And then you got the aspect of just me and Hannah, you know, my wife, because, you know, we live here. Like, this is our life, right? This is everything that we do. So every day, the way I treat my wife, right, the way I treat Hannah, is a witness to our youth. So they see the way we talk to each other in the flower shop, right? They see the way we talk to each other on the farm. They see the way I interact with my children, right? And that's something I can't really understate, but people observe you, right? Like they're gonna watch you more than they're gonna listen to you. We have several kids who are just young single dads or single moms, and they're trying to raise their kids, and they'll pull me aside and, hey, Keelan, I'm kind of struggling with this issue with my kids or with my baby mama. Can you give me some advice? Can you give me some pointers, right? Because like they're trying, right? You know, you've got these young men, they're trying to be better fathers than what they had in their lives. But they just don't know how because they don't have an example, right? So family is actually a big part of our ministry. And you look on the outside, you think it's just about economics and it's about business. But you actually come inside, it really is all about family. It really is about just demonstrating to our youth that, hey, the only reason this is successful is because there's a strong marriage at the foundation with me and my wife, Hannah. And if you want to be successful in life, right, you too need to learn how to build strong family units. Yeah.
What was the initial community response to the Eco House? And did that change over time at all?
Yes, that did. So when we first came here back in 2014, we spent our first year really just kind of surveying the community, talking to different aldermen, political leaders, business leaders, nonprofit leaders, just to get a lay of the land. We didn't want to try to recreate the wheel, right? So it was very important for us to feel like we were actually solving a real need and a real problem. And once we really discovered that the real need was really homegrown industry, then we started trying to figure out, well, what could we do here? Now, in Chicago, there's thousands of vacant lots. A lot of them are predominantly located on the south side or the west side. And we started thinking like, well, maybe we could do something in agriculture, right? At first, when we started talking about flowers, we got a lot of pushback. People were like, well, why are you trying to grow flowers? You can't eat a flower. Don't you know this is a food desert? Oh, like, what are you doing? We need healthy food, blah, blah, blah. We're not anti-food, by the way. You know, like, we definitely want people to have good food. I have chickens in my backyard. So we're definitely about food. But for us, as we looked at the business picture, okay, what people are really saying is they want industry. So let's look at this from an economic standpoint. And the flower oil industry, it's a $35 billion a year industry, but 80% of the flowers you see in the United States come from overseas. So if we could just start to capture some of that wealth that currently is going to other countries, then maybe we can start putting more money in the pockets of our youth and their families, and then you can go to Whole Foods and buy whatever food you want. You know what I mean? So, but it took time to really get people to buy into that vision. And we really had to demonstrate that. Nowadays, people support it. They see the fruit of it. But it really does go to show that when God really gives you an unconventional vision and an unconventional idea, that you have to be willing to, you know, be willing to take those early bullets, so to speak, because people aren't initially going to understand, you know what I mean? But that's part of, I feel like, kind of Christ-like leadership is kind of walking along people, walking along a community and leading them to a better future that maybe in the beginning, they don't quite get it. I mean, you know, you think about Moses leading the people out of Egypt, right? He faced a lot of resistance. in the beginning. People just didn't understand it. Fast forward a couple generations and they're in Canaan. People are like, man, Moses was this great guy. I'm really glad that he really did what he did and he took that risk to lead us in direction that we didn't necessarily see the light. But that's how I kind of feel like with our work. We're trying to lead the people to a better economic future, a better social future, so that our communities can be more peaceful and prosperous.
I like, again, you said unconventional ideas. I think in Christian community, especially in a church setting, they are often not the most favorable ideas because we want to invest in somebody who's going to go and evangelize as traditionally been done in the street, handing those flyers, even if that means shouting on the megaphone or social media. In our new day and age, social media engagement and using the same method there. But when it comes to unconventional ideas like farming, it's harder. And some of the challenges that you mentioned make sense too, especially when you're trying to engage the Christian community and bring them on board that, hey, we're trying to do this as a part of the mission's gospel. But let me ask you this, what were some of the hardest challenges? I know that you already mentioned some, but what were the some of the hardest challenges you have faced during this project?
I think to me the question is, what challenges have I not faced? this is, this work isn't for the faint of heart, right? On the personal level, it's a dangerous neighborhood that I live in. Just get that out the way. I mean, there's definitely been moments where there's been gunshots on our block, and my life is just as much at risk as anybody else's. But when people start shooting, this definitely is not for the faint of heart. But I would say the biggest challenge that we've really faced, similar to kind of like what you see in the Bible, is unbelief. You know what I mean? Like just trying to get people to believe that God can actually end the violence, that God can actually give us an ideal that will unleash prosperity. That's really been the hardest ball to push, is getting people to actually believe things can change in these neighborhoods, right? Because so many people have just come to the conclusion that, oh, well, this is the way it's always going to be, right? So you look at the ghetto, you look at the hood, it's always going to be like this. There's nothing we can do. These problems are just too big. So when you start trying to talk about, hey, you know what? There's an end game here. We can actually develop solutions where we don't have to live like this anymore, right? We don't have to live with high violence and high crime and high poverty. And people just look at you like you're, from Mars. You know what I mean? So I would say definitely the biggest challenge has been over trying to overcome people's unbelief and try to overcome people's fixated ideals that things just don't change and it's not true. I mean, you look out throughout American history or throughout world history, things are changing all the time. You know, the story of God and his fingerprints is all throughout human history. So if things never changed, like it would still be a very, very violent world. I mean, look at the times of Noah, right? In the book of Genesis. Thank God we're not living in those times anymore. Like they changed, right? So why not today? Why can't things get better? Why can't our communities become healthier? Why can't one day, 10, 15, 20 years from now, we talk about the violence on the south side of Chicago as a unfortunate time in our history, but it's a thing of the past, right? It's something that's being studied in history books. Like that's what we're really trying to change, and that's really been the biggest challenge, is getting people to believe that God can do more than get you a new car or get you a new house or help your kid get into college. Those are all important things, but we serve a big God. You know what I mean? Problems aren't too big for him. He just needs someone who's willing to say yes and, come into agreement with his plans and his will, and really be willing to lay down your life the way Jesus laid down his life for us in order for us to see those changes in our world.
Talking about belief, what is a commonly held belief or assumption about bad neighborhoods you would like to debunk?
The biggest stereotype that I would like to debunk is that the people here, they don't care, right? I feel like there's this perception that, oh, well, those people, they don't care about the quality of their neighborhoods, right? They don't care about the quality of life, don't care about the fact that there's so much violence. It's not true. I mean, the people here are just like people anywhere. So you look at any human being, we all want to have food in our bellies. We all want to have a roof over our head. We all want to have a meaningful job. We all want to be able to live in peace and harmony and to have a certain level of prosperity where our basic needs are met, right? So it's no different here in the inner city on the south side of Chicago. When you kind of understand that, then you really understand that there's really a lot of assets here, a lot of hidden assets here, because people do want a better community. It's just when you're overwhelmed with the calamities that you're facing and the troubles that you're facing, it can be hard for you to really have that mental bandwidth to think about, okay, well, what can I do? Like, what's a viable exit strategy for me? But that's where I feel like, that's a great opportunity for Christians to kind of step in and fill that gap, because we're called to be the salt and light of the world. And what better place to be salt and light than places where, there's darkness,
Right.
right? Places where there's desperation, there's that hunger. And there's a lot of that here where people are super hungry for the new things of God. And that's one of the things I tell people. Southside Blooms couldn't flourish like a very wealthy community because there's not that same need. There's not that same desperation, right? But here, where there is that desperation, it's a lot easier to birth something brand new because people are willing to take a chance on it. They're willing to take a risk, right? Thankfully, it is because it's emerging and it's beautiful what our community's doing with flowers.
Yeah, and I think that you already gave a good illustration from the Bible, and I think the another one that comes to my mind is doctor, and Jesus made that comment too, that this is for the sick, is not for the healthy. And I think the work that you guys are doing is similar to the same illustration can be applied to that too, that it's good for the sick because sick is desperate for help. And the debunking of that would be where else you would go if not that the community that really need financially sick or economically sick. And then spiritual sickness comes with that because belief deep down comes from when you trust the Lord that He's going to provide for you. Trust the Lord that He is greater than your problems and trust the Lord that He got a plan for you and it will come to pass in His due time. And trusting that while at the same time at being the answer to those problems. That's one of the things I always think is missing in the application end of the church. We are good at theology, we are good at preaching, but forget that we are the answer of some of those prayers that being offered by saints, by people around the world. Because if we, God gave us wisdom, God gave us a mind and rationale and resources, they should be put to work for the glory of Christ and thus becoming the answer to some of those prayers. And I think I love the way you guys are framing your ministry and presenting it. How have you seen God's hand in your work? Let me ask you that one now.
Every day.
Yeah,
I
good.
mean, that's one been one of the more beautiful things of this journey is that I really do feel like we have a very true and authentic testimony. Can really think about everything from how I met Hannah to my kids being born to yes, even getting this house. So just kind of give like one quick example. So when we were trying to like get into the neighborhood in the early days, it was like back in 2015, it was very important for us to, really get boots on the ground and really have a stake in the neighborhood, right? Because it's really hard to, get going with your ministry and you don't have a physical presence. But the problem is like home buying in Inglewood is not like other neighborhoods, right? So you're not talking about finished properties with, nice, staged homes and everything looks great. For us, home buying was looking at vacant properties, right? You're looking at dilapidated properties. And these are properties that banks generally don't want to take a risk on, because you need to do construction, you need to do rehabilitation. And me and Hannah, we didn't have any money at the time. I mean, at that time, like, our household income was probably no more than like $25,000.
Wow.
And we needed a property, and we're believing God for this. Find this property here in Inglewood, is owned by Fannie Mae at the time. They had it for sale for $25,000, which we were very excited about. But now we needed to get a bank that was willing to finance the rehab part because, the house had like a grease fire. I mean, it's totally unlivable, right? Kind of going through the whole bank process where they're vetting us. We're getting close to the end and we're about to close. And there's an issue because, like, I guess, like the water bill wasn't paid. So, like, our real estate agent, like, scrambled, went to City Hall, took care of that water bill just so that it wouldn't, like, screw up the deal. And we were able to close on our FHA rehab loan. But then we had to start on, like, a 6-month construction project, right? And keep in mind, like, Hannah and I, we have no background in this. We're not real estate investors. We're not real estate developers. I'm not a construction worker. Like, we're doing all this by faith, right? So we're going through this process for the first time. Then we have to go through this construction process. I'm like coming down here every day, working with the contractors to really Try to get this house right. And good thing I did because there's a lot of corners they're trying to cut. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we're able to get this property within our budget. I mean, we really stretched it every dollar, but that house has become the Eco House, right? And our entire ministry, everything that you see today with Southside Blooms, that house that we had to really, stand in faith and believe that God would somehow close a deal and then have us have a successful construction, become the foundation of our ministry because now it's the Eco House. So Southside Blooms, it started in the basement of this house. All our flower farms, the flower farm started in our backyard when we had our first youth program, just teaching them gardening and that kind of thing. So it's really cool how God took something very small and he's turning it into growing and scaling ministry. I mean, today we have over 10 acres of farms that we farm here in Chicago, as well as Gary, Indiana. We're in the process of opening up our second flower shop on the west side. So, we're really beginning to grow and expand, but everything started because of, our faith that God would give us this dilapidated house, turn it around, and now look what he's doing to it.
Amen. How can individuals and churches actively participate in and promote environmental sustainability in urban areas?
Taking it back to the scriptures, counting the cost. That's always my first piece of advice to people is count the cost of, okay, how much are you willing to give to get what you want, right? How much are you willing, is this something that you're willing to sacrifice financially for? Is this something that you're maybe willing to relocate for? Is this something you're willing to die for? So that's where it begins because that's going to determine how far you're going to be able to go, so to speak. If you're an individual, it's a lot easier. I'll be honest with you. I started as an individual. The reason why it's easier is because you only have to answer to one person, that's Jesus. if you make that decision that, hey, this is something I really care about and I really want to I want God to use my life to bring healing to creation in that holistic way to really preserve life, you just give your life as a seed and God will do the rest. Like that's what happened to me. I just basically gave my life as a seed and trusted that he would grow it into something fruitful. But yeah, like that's if you're an individual, if you're a church, it's a little more complicated because you got to deal with the board and you got bylaws and this and that. And churches generally sometimes can be kind of fixed in their culture and can be kind of, it's like trying to move the Titanic sometimes, you know what I mean, when you're in a church. So I think for me, my advice to a church would be if you're a pastor or a leader and you're trying to really cast that vision, to really start small. You know what I mean? Like, as they say, like Rome wasn't built in a day, right? So, start with some like small wins. Cause like once we, got to a point where we became more of an organization and, just for your audience to understand, we started with $0 back in 2014. Currently our organization is over a $2 million a year organization. We have 48 people on our staff. Like, we've grown a lot. We've experienced every phase of, going from like a tiny microscopic ministry to a very large ministry. And I would say like when you have other people involved, you definitely got to start small. You have to start with just maybe a small community gardening project or maybe go to your local school and just doing the whole little bucket garden thing. You just want to give people that little taste of, hey, I kind of like this. Hey, this isn't scary. Hey, this isn't, this is something that's kind of cool. It's kind of fun. And then once people start believing that, oh, this is something we can do as a church, we can do as a community, you start seeing the response from the larger community, then it gets a little bit easier to then push those bigger things. So that'll be my advice, but everything really does start that question of counting the costs and first figuring out what are you willing to give both personally and organizationally before you even start on your journey.
Thank you, Kaylin. Anything else you'd like to add to this conversation?
I think like the last thing I would just like to mention to you, your listeners is it's worth it. A lot of times, people get scared when they think about, well, I could never do this. I could never move to a scary neighborhood. I could never quit my job. I could never sell my home, but it's worth it. I mean, what, been doing this for 13 years since I basically took up my cross and said yes to Christ and gave full submission to him. And I just look at the things he's done over that time and compared to like what I was thinking my life trajectory would be. And I would have never guessed in a million years that I'll be sitting here talking to someone like you, having people like you even be interested in our story. And for it to happen relatively fast, I mean, I'm only 39 years old. I'm still a young guy. And when I first started, my life was messy. In the early days, like I was homeless. I was kind of like couch surfing, just trying to rent room to room, you know, crash on people's couches. I would be hungry because I, you know, was having a hard time trying to make money. You know, so like I was, it was tough living, you know, in those early days to be at where we're at today and to feel like at 39 years old that, wow, my life mattered. You know what I mean? Like I could die tomorrow. I mean, I don't want to die tomorrow, but you know, but you know, it's just like, it's a great feeling to know that I could die tomorrow and knowing that my life actually meant a difference to other people. And there's many people go an entire lifetime never experiencing that. So the biggest piece of encouragement, I'll say, it's worth it. Don't think about the short-term pain. Think about the long-term gain.
Oh man, that's amazing. That's brilliant. Thank you so much. And for the last thing, because we talk about heavy topics, I'd like to ask you to tell a joke to lighten the mood.
Okay, so I'm from Wisconsin, and so hopefully you don't think my jokes are corny, but we're gonna go with it anyway.
That's good, man. I love corny jokes.
What do you call a cow in a tornado?
What?
A milkshake.
That one I heard it, just so you know. But I will definitely pass that on to my boys. My boys love it. I have a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, and my girls are three. A twin girls also. I have twin girls.
Oh,
Yeah,
no,
they are
awesome.
three.
Congrats.
Yeah.
So you know what it's like to have sleepless nights then if
That's right. That's right. That's right. Thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Elin Backwell. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at oururbanvoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tune in 2 weeks for more honest discussions from diverse voices.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.